we trust. Charge we're not sure about.
Welcome to episode 66 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Can we add another six?
Yeah, why not? 666. And on that note, Lauren, let's have the voice.
666.
Yeah. Gabriel, how do you feel knowing you're going to be working for NetApp soon? I think we need the voice again, Lauren.
The official... no comment is no comment.
Of course. Okay, so I'll tell you what, let's dive into what we've got. So I just want to follow up on something that we said last week, or maybe the week before. We threw out the idea to listeners, hey, look, we've got a bunch of podcast stickers. If you're interested in them, DM us, get in touch with us, whatever. Via some means, you need to provide us with your home mailing address. But I've been like some logistics company this week, distributing stickers out to tons of people. I ran out of stickers, but I just ordered another 200 stickers that arrived today. So if you like our logo and if you want to sport our stickers on your laptop or get a tattoo made out of them on your arse or whatever, I don't know. We've got
distribution as a service.
Only have, on your ass, though.
Are there tattoo parlors around here that have this, have a template in for In Tech We Trust?
Let's not pretend you don't already have one, Mark.
It's the internet of stickers.
I don't have a tat.
You guys told me that was the only way I could get on the show regularly.
That is true, yes.
Yes, we did.
Anyway, I've got stickers. Get in touch with us if you want stickers, you want to support them on your laptop, whatever, right? So, tech news, right? You know what? I haven't actually got anything for tech news, but I did want us to follow up on the discussion that we had last week. Lauren, you had a great topic in Hot or Not about bare metal in the cloud, right? And we all... me included, right, said it was not hot. And maybe we'll talk about what our definition of hot is as part of the discussion.
I wasn't paying attention.
No, well, you never do, Gabriel, right? What's new there?
I probably slept through that part of the podcast.
Yeah.
I was multitasking.
But we all basically said not hot, right? And then on our LinkedIn group, CTO advisor Keith Townsend basically disagreed with everything we said. And I think the whole like premise of where he was coming from was that, okay, for Amazon Web Services and Rackspace and anybody else that offers cloud infrastructure as a service, right? As soon as they start to offer bare metal, you kind of, in a way, you're completing the solution that you offer, right? You offer... a way for customers to avoid the hypervisor tax. Gabriel, you're on about that quite a lot, okay?
Yeah.
And it removes a potential barrier for getting some new customers and some new workloads onto your cloud platform, right? So Keith was basically saying he thought it was hot. I know John Troyer also thought it was hot, along with some other people. And it made me think at least, right, okay, let's take definitions of what's hot to one side for the time being, right? But last week I was very much of the opinion that it was meh. I don't really see why they're doing it. I have eaten some humble pie, and I don't know. I think I see why they do it now, right?
I don't necessarily think that it's hot for some of the reasons that they've given, because it really boils down to the ability to execute and sell that as a service. And, you know, now they're competing against a lot of the managed service providers or the small regional hosting providers that have made private hosted solutions their kind of bread and butter. And that's a relationship driven business. And I think that, you know, if you look at, sure, there's certain like large super scale customers that may want to do some kind of bare metal implementation on Amazon, but it's not necessarily the initial use case that a lot of people look at Amazon to do. And so that's why I think that it's kind of a hot and not hot, because it's good that they're embracing that model. But I also am curious as to how they're going to implement it. And there's a different cost structure associated with private bare metal hosting than there is with distributed shared hosting models the way they've been implemented so far. And I just don't know if Amazon is ready to incur that particular adjustment, right?
That's my question. I understand the arguments, but I mean, realistically speaking, the tax that you pay on having a dedicated server in the cloud as opposed to doing a hybrid cloud and running those dedicated servers in your own data center, I mean, obviously that's what people are doing right now. Maybe that'll change in the future, but there's a reason why we're running hybrid clouds, and it's not just because, you know, we like to manage multiple locations, right?
No, but when you do, let's say you would keep your physical or your bare metal workloads on-prem or in a colo or whatever your model is, right, and you put your virtualized workloads and things maybe out into the public cloud, right? But even with your own, you know, the private part of your hybrid cloud, if I can call it that, you don't have loads of infrastructure spare sitting around there that would let you potentially burst into it. I'm thinking if you only have fleeting needs for bare metal workloads, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you go through the pain and all the expense of having to buy the equipment and make the CapEx investment and all of that kind of stuff when you could go to Amazon or whoever it is, right? And take that same pay-as-you-go, OPEX, only pay for what you use model, use it for a week, use it for 6 weeks, turn it off, you don't use it anymore. It still gives you that kind of flexibility that you really don't get when you have to actually own the tin yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that you would just have to do a cost analysis in that case, right? And see what works out better for you on various fronts.
I just think, you know, it's big picture stuff I'm talking here, right? And it's all very high level, but you get the flexibility that comes with the public cloud and you get the benefits of bare metal in, you know, for whatever reasons you need bare metal, right? But you get all that flexibility that comes with the public cloud that it's really hard to get, you know, if you own the stuff. Even if it is cheaper for you to buy and own your own, right, in the long run, it's still not as flexible because what if in 6 months' time you actually, yeah, we don't need that anymore? I don't know. Mark, did you have any thoughts on it?
No, I'm not going to say anything because I want to continue to conceal my criteria for what I believe is hot or not hot.
That's really good, right? So how do we define, because we've done it for like two or three episodes now, and we've never actually said what constitutes something as being hot.
Yeah, well, I think I told Keith, you know, my response was that, you know, it needs to be somewhat wide. It needs to be something that a lot of people would be interested in. And I just don't see the bare metal thing as being something that a lot of people would be interested in. But then, you know, we had the discussion a couple of weeks ago about just searching on Google. And a lot of people search on Google, but it's not the kind of thing that's stimulating. And it's just they just do it all the time.
Yeah.
So I've got to figure that one out because I backed myself into a weird corner there.
Okay.
Maybe we should call it like throwing shade or not throwing shade. Where we just decide if we really hate it, then we can throw shade
stink
at it.
Eye or
we
no
don't,
stink
then it's fine.
Maybe. Okay, so fair enough. There's obviously some divided opinion there. Maybe it wasn't as clean cut as we said last week. Maybe there are some use cases, all that kind of jazz. Time will tell us, right? Let's move on to just summarize the business news, right? NetApp are about to make a play for SolidFire. Apparently, Gabriel, we know, no comment. Also in the news.
Well, Amazon, wait a minute. No, we shouldn't assume that. Like, maybe he's got a lot to say.
Yeah, no, he does.
Well, oodles and oodles until I get canned.
So Amazon Web Services apparently can go from an $8 billion run rate business, which is what it is at the moment, to $38 billion by 2020. And I looked at that right now. I was like, oh, 2020, that's miles away. No, that's like 4 to 5 years away. So apparently Amazon Web Services can get even bigger. And I mean, that is some huge old growth, that from $8 billion to $38 billion. What else have we got? Oh, VMware walking away from the VirtuStream deal, leaving it entirely in the hands of EMC. And HP invests $10 million in Scality. So Crunchbase are calling this a Series E round of funding. I think taking Scality to about $90 million in total. But, you know, you add that up with the, I think there are reseller agreements for HP to sell Scality and also vice versa for Scality to sell HP servers as well. And does that add up to a potential acquisition target for HP in the future? Who knows? And that's all we've got in business and tech news for the week. So,
well, I just thought there was one other one that I thought was really good. I didn't get it on the agenda, and that was Philips making light bulb systems that would have incompatible light bulbs.
What?
Yeah, did you?
No.
I should post that in the notes. No, it was hilarious. I'm trying to remember who. I think Alex, good old Alex Tangent on Twitter, uh-huh. Alex McDonald from NetApp, he had found this thing and surfaced it. Philips is planning to put light systems out, but you couldn't just plug anybody's bulb into them.
And what's
some
the
Internet of Things bullshit.
I think they're changing yeah, so they did like a 180, and now they're saying, oh, well, we'll let, you know, other light bulbs in now too.
Yeah, now they'll let non-compliant light bulbs fit in their fixtures or something. Just the most ridiculous thing ever. Anyway, maybe it's not a thing, and we shouldn't even talk about it.
No, that's all right. Speaking of Alex Tangent, or Alex McDonald, to give him his full and proper name, he's over at NetApp, and apparently Gabriel might be quite soon. Pitch in where you can, Gabriel, but Lauren and Mark, any particular thoughts on that as a deal for NetApp? And also, is it a good thing for SolidFire? Because in the past, NetApp have not had the kind of reputation that, let's say, EMC have had when it comes to integrating acquisitions and what have you. I get that this is a different beast to something like Spinnaker, which is like the archetypal NetApp screw-up of an integration, right? But, you know, is this a good thing, do we think, for SolidFire if it happens? And it's all speculation at the moment. And is it a good thing for NetApp? And will NetApp finally get kind of a coherent strategy when it comes to all-flash products?
I think it's a good thing for Cisco, but I'll let Mark be the intelligent one here.
Well, the positive thing that SolidFire gets out of it is a big sales force that can sell this product all over the place. It's not clear that NetApp's sales force is ready to sell a product like SolidFire's, but they're in a lot of places. They have a lot of accounts. They've got, you know, teams that I don't want to make comments that people are going to say, you don't know what you're talking about when you talk about NetApp sales teams. But they do have, you know, a large international sales force with a lot of penetration. It means that the SolidFire product will get exposed to a lot more customers and probably sell a lot more units. That's what happened when I was at Equalogic. It happened when I was at Store Simple. It happened when I was at 3PAR. You know, the products that went into the acquiring company sold a lot. And there's some satisfaction in that.
But NetApp, for quite a long, long time now, has, at least in my opinion, right, suffered from this branding of that they only get ONTAP. They only understand ONTAP and how to sell it and how to work with it and what have you. And everything has to be bolted into, fixtured around ONTAP. And I wonder how much their sales force will, if I can use the term, grok SolidFire and the kind of markets that it appeals to as well. I get that they've got lots of boots on the ground and they're very good at selling stuff, don't get me wrong, and that ONTAP's a great product at the end of the day, but it's not necessarily an automatic easy fit into the company, the culture, and the sales force as well, really.
How hard storage, really?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, there's Cisco weighing in.
Yeah, because Cisco nailed storage, never mind.
I think NetApp has the talent to assimilate the product and use it. You know, they're not gonna make the mistake that they did with Spinnaker and try to meld it into a current product line. The SolidFire product, I mean, if this deal goes through, I'm sure it's a whole new product line for NetApp. You know, I think the real question there is how many other acquisitions do they need to have to cover the bases, right? Mm-hmm. You know, SolidFire is a product. Well, Gabriel should talk what SolidFire is good for, but it's cloud service providers and private cloud, and it tends to be a large scale product for people that really need to have a lot of services. NetApp has a lot of or cloud like services, DevOps types environments. Right. That's where SolidFire is really good at. It's a sweet spot and they're doing really well there. You know, there's a lot of customers that aren't those kinds of customers and NetApp needs products there too. Right. And are they going to continue to sell their current product set? Are they looking to invest in other products? What's going to happen? I think it's a good move for NetApp. They need fresh blood. They haven't really been able to do that internally through their own organization, or at least the last time they tried.
What I want to know is, yes, okay, so they've got the talent to assimilate SolidFire should the acquisition happen. Have they got the talent and the ability to assimilate Gabriel, though? I mean, that's the big question on my mind.
That's an expensive proposition.
Yeah.
That's what Gabriel wants to do, if he wants to run the company or if he wants to just hide out and get paid.
Yeah, and you know all about that, Mark.
Thanks, Nigel.
Yeah, so if the deal does happen, Gabriel, I don't doubt that you would do this anyway, but pick up the old phone to Mark, find out how you can lie low and make a ton of cash for next couple of years, improve your golf game, all of that stuff. You're on to a winner there.
I mean, it's like, here's a funny thing. Like, I would have so much to say, but I can't say a damn thing.
No, you can't. You cannot.
Okay, the next item we had was Amazon Web Services can go from today being an $8 billion business to a $38 billion business in 4 to 5 years. That is humongous growth. What's that telling us there?
It's telling us that they've got people doing funny things with the numbers again.
No. Well, we have no real way to know if there's funny things going on in the numbers, but the reality is that they're doing a grip of business. If you look at the potentials there, I mean, ever since they released their financials, I think it's taken a lot of people and thrown them for a loop because they're like, holy cow, how can they be this profitable? How the margins be that good for them? And, you know, you add up 2.2 billion times 4 for, you know, a kind of a base annual run rate, $8 billion, you know, $9 billion. That's close to the valuation of VMware. You know, and the one comment I made on Twitter was like, the VMware went after the wrong people to compete against, and now they're trying to pivot to some of that competition, and it's just too little too late. Because I think that there are a large swath of customers that would potentially be traditional in-house, on-premises virtualization that are going to move some of that stuff into public cloud on either IE, AWS, Amazon, AWS, Google, or Azure.
Azure.
Azure. And those are the three legitimate public cloud places.
Azure.
Run with, and then everybody else is a managed service provider catering to specific customers and specific workloads, you know, like a VirtuStream, which I'm sure we'll talk about, going after SAP customers and so on and so forth, and more of that white glove treatment versus the organizations that are just putting tons and tons of cattle into the public cloud. And you also start to see some of the larger players as well, the CenturyLinks in the world, start to make their migration away from public and more towards hosted private and hybrid integrations.
I assume that $30 billion will all be from dedicated servers on the cloud that we all voted not hot, that. Right?
Yeah, and you predicted it all.
That can be pretty lucrative if you get the price. I mean, think about it this way, right? Like, if I'm Amazon, how much do I have to pay for a server? $4?
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you buy in lots of 10,000 and you set the price for most of the components and so on and so forth, if I want to dedicate, you know, 100,000 of the 1 to 4 million servers the physical servers that I currently have running my organization, I can probably, you know, eke out some profitability there. It's just a matter of how much profitability they can do or how much money they decide to lose in the short term as they build that business up and make it something that's paramount for certain companies to where they're completely locked in. I've had customer conversations where their annual or their monthly Amazon bills are $400,000 to $500,000. That's a lot of coin, brother.
That is a lot of coin. I just want to let listeners know, right, this whole discussion is based off the back of a Barron's article, but I'm just looking at it now as well, and they're saying they're assuming that this $38 billion business unit of Amazon Web Services would have a 35% operating margin, which is, that's decent. Do we want to jump onto VirtuStream?
Sure.
Who hasn't jumped onto VirtuStream?
VMware.
Oh, very good. That stays in the podcast. Well, you did just mention VirtuStream anyway, Gabriel, there. So apparently VMware are walking away from the deal, right, leaving it entirely in EMC's hands. Now, I'm guessing, right, that this is all to do with the overall Dell acquiring EMC and VMware stockholders not being happy with it. The deal was apparently going to be a 50-50 split between VMware and EMC, but all of the numbers were going to show up on VMware's books, but they reckon it's a while before it would be able to make a profit. And therefore, they're saying that, well, VMware shareholders weren't happy that that was going to happen. Apparently, they've walked away from the deal. And thinking about it like that, I kind of understand in the short term why you would do that. But is it the right thing to do in the long-term play? You know, is VirtuStream as a long-term play viable? And will that be like a big business potentially for Dell, EMC, whoever they are in the future?
Nope.
No, I don't think so. I mean, the thing we were just talking about, right, where Amazon's raking in all this money and competition in the cloud, you know, the thing about Amazon making that much is, you know, are anybody going to be able to eat into that pie? And are any going to be, is anybody going to be able to eat into that pie at the same kind of margin level? And if so, you know, how are they going to fund that? And I just, you know, I've said it before, I don't see Dell, EMC, VMware being able to fund the cloud expansion to be able to get it to the point where they can compete. This race is over. It's done. It's run. If you're not in there, you're not doing it.
Yeah, but also, I mean, like that model of delivery that they're going after with that type of platform is capital intensive. It needs a lot of funding to get to that maturity rate. And even if you look at what VMware has done with their own, you know, cloud offering, you know, it's a lot of cash to throw at something that may or may not work. I think sometimes they're kind of reevaluating what their position is, what their success rate looks like, and how, you know, how much of their own internal technologies they've been able to apply to make this streamlined, simple, and fast. And if it's one of these things where it's like super labor intensive or super capital intensive, then obviously they don't have the kind of spare disposable income that an Amazon has or a Microsoft has to compete successfully in that market. And as such, they need to take a hard look and go, yeah, it's time to shit or get off the pot. And I think they've decided to get off the pot, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've looked at this before. Amazon, Microsoft, and Google all have significant services business. You know, and Google does the advertising. Amazon sells a lot of stuff. Microsoft's already, you know, they've got Office. There's already money machines that they can subsidize expansion in the cloud. What do Dell, VMware, and EMC have that is cloudy that they're already building out? Nothing.
Debt. They're building their debt out.
Yeah, they're building out debt. They don't, you know, there's just no way. I'm sorry.
My question, too, is this is actually a question for you guys. Are they trying to stop the hemorrhaging, too, with the stock decline? Because I also read, isn't Dell buying like $3 billion of that tracking stock back?
I thought it was five, yeah. I mean, that's a good point to bring up. You know, it's like if you look at VMware stock prior to the announcement of this thing, it was like 80-something bucks a share, and now it's down at 55.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just a few weeks before that, it was, you know, near 100, too. So,
I think that partially reflects the confidence that investors have that Dell can manage this. It's not all about VirtuStream. It's about them building, it's about Dell's ability to do anything with software.
Oh, right. So away from the financial side of things, you think that there's a wider concern that it's just not in their core competency or something like that?
Yep. Okay. I think so. I think people look at this and they say, really?
Yeah. This is not your bread and butter.
Yeah.
You know, I could see why you're making this pivot, but it's like day late, dollar short, or actually like 3 years too late.
I mean, So the other thing that came up, right, is that they're looking to sell Perot Systems for $5 billion or something like that.
Got to pay off that debt.
Yeah, yeah. Dell is now looking to try to, you know, articles like that come out. It's like, hey, Dell's shopping Perot Systems for $5 billion. Here's all the people that, you know, they think or somebody thinks could be buyers. It's like after an article like that comes out and it's made public, it's, you know, do you have any leverage anymore? You know,
I mean, they're basically like Craigslisting all of their stuff to afford new things, right? I mean, that's what I did when I moved in with my fiance, right? We put a bunch of furniture on Craigslist and sold it so we could buy better furniture.
We should go on Craigslist Austin and see if Perot Systems is there.
So do me a favor, what's Craigslist?
Sorry, Nigel.
That's all right.
It's a U.S.-based, apparently, site where you can just sell your stuff. And usually they're, you know, it's by region. So if I'm selling it in Indiana, I'm going to post it in Indiana.
All right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, Nigel, you should just Google up Craigslist and find it because they have it there in the U.K. You find all kinds of things you can buy. You know, Google up firearms Craigslist and see what you can purchase.
So how is it Craig as in the name, C-R-A-I-G? Or
yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure you've got it.
Craigslist London. Okay, yeah, there you go. Oh, there's one for Manchester as well. No way.
Way.
There's also a lot of personal ads for various services that you might be able to buy on Craigslist.
Okay, so...
you want somebody to come over to your house and make tacos.
Except my wife's not looking then.
Search for something on casual.
Okay, so we had one more item anyway. HP to, and see how I'm calling them HP, and I'm a lot cooler now, and I'm not trying to say HPE. Anyway, HP invests $10 million in Scality. I think it spells the death of whatever their existing scale-out object storage solution.
Did they have one?
They did. I can't remember what it was called, though, but clearly this is the
death. Store not going to buy this?
I think that's right,
Store
yeah.
dead?
Store nobody wants to buy?
Store done?
Store toast?
Store toast. That's it. I like that. Store toast.
Oh my God, that's the bitchinest.
Yeah. So, you know, actually, there's a couple problems with this, right? So not only does it signal something about HP's own stuff, but it also sets up a problem for Scality, right? When you take that much money of a strategic investment, what are your other investment options, right? You lose leverage with everybody else. And maybe Scality figured out that's what they need to do because NetApp's probably not going to buy them. EMC's not going to buy them. Dell's not going to buy them. Mm-hmm. IBM's not going to buy them. IBM's got, you know, CleverSafe. So yep. Who's left to take Scality out? Well, it's HP. Well, does HP want to spend the money to buy Scality, or do they just want to throw a smaller amount of investment in there? I tell you, it's not a great exit. It's not a great exit scenario now for Scality.
Do they get beholden to the HP?
Totally. It's HPE or nobody now.
Is that like it's 2 a.m. and the bar light come on and you just have to go home with whoever's left?
Oh,
nailed it.
That is totally it.
No, all right. So I will say this, though. It's like I've worked with the Scality guys and Leo Lung's over there, and there's some really sharp talent over there. And those guys have a really good sales model to a certain type of customer. But it's like their first initial purchase point, and I'm sure they will correct me, but it's like if I'm not talking about like my first buy as a petabyte, then you know it's not that traditional storage discussion that we have, and there's a certain customer ecosystem that really buys into that. And how do I, as HP, leverage something like that in my customer base? Well, obviously, I take whatever HP high density storage server I have, and I layer Scality on top of that and create a package and sell that. And then I comp my salespeople on the software package and the server package, and everybody's happy because we have a product that competes in a specific niche. Without having a full understanding of what this relationship looks like, you know, it could be completely different. And it could be something that's more beneficial to Scality than it is necessarily to HP, because they still have, you know, Supermicro and Quanta and half a dozen other original equipment manufacturers out there that can do the same thing at a way lower price point than an HP is going to do. If we look at like the last,
but none of those guys can sell Scality's product for them. I mean,
well, no, they can't, and you're right about that. But then again, the type of customer that's buying that type of product gives a rat's ass about, you know, who's tins underneath. They just want, like, I want $100 a terabyte.
You know, I agree with you to agree there. But
I mean, are they going to pay a premium for the HP product, the HP hardware underneath, or are they just going to, like,
I'm doing
500 petabytes of storage, and if even 10 out of 1,000 nodes go down, I could care less, right? And those are some of the things I've seen in a specific type of customer ecosystem where it's like, yeah, we're going to do 100 petabytes just at the first run, or we're going to do 500 petabytes in the first run for this particular project. And, you know, we're looking at a specific price per terabyte, and the underlying physical hardware, the cheapest part I can get is the one that I'm going to run with. And the software portion of it, you know, they're going to wheel and deal. And I just, you know, I think that this fills a gap for a certain type of HP product that they really don't have a competitive space in. But, you know, like I said, it'll be interesting to see how it's structured in terms of who gets comp for what.
Yeah, I think though a lot of times these strategic funding deals are very limiting to the company that receives the funds, especially in today's environment. It's not like it used to be, right? There are big players off the table now that will not buy Scality. And to not close the deal is dangerous. Right, they've taken a lot of money. They've got it's not like they've got debt. It's basically VC money. You know what happens now when Scality spends this and exhausts this money? Right, oof, this is tough. They better have a real good run rate going. I mean, you know how it is. I mean, this is an industry where funding is getting hard to come by. It's getting very expensive.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and even worse so is if the Fed raises rates 25 basis points, it makes it even more difficult for them to get money.
That happened today.
So the Fed funds rate is the rate that banks can lend money to each other, and it's been zero.